The Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up for game day with Bud Light. Gather your friends, grab some Bud Light, and get ready for the big game. Bud Light, please drink responsibly.
We've been talking about, I thought it was an interesting topic when we were discussing SEC West and these coaches that have been coming in, and specifically about Jimbo Fisher being at Texas A&M. You know, what he was able to do at Florida State was great. But at some point in time, you just wonder if he's going to be able to replicate that at Texas A&M. If he's going to be able to capture what he had. Because I'm not trying to say I'm sure he's a fine coach, but it is a lot different taking over a program from an icon like Bobby Bowden that was setting you up for success,
mm-hmm,
and had built a machine to where it was known for 30, 40, 50 years how great of a program it was, and then to just slide right after that and take it over. And then go to A&M, where it's not that way. It's not in bad shape. It's not in the worst shape of all time, but it's definitely not to the level that Florida State was in. Go over there, try to rebuild it, try to do it your style, and see what it plays out. I think Brett Bielema could probably attest to that, where he took over at Wisconsin, and he looked like he was one of the best coaches out there.
Mm-hmm.
But he also took over after an established coach who had built it into a fine program. And then he goes into a program like Arkansas that had some decent success, but needed some help, needed a rejuvenation, and he was unable to capture that. So you could see, again, and I think Jimbo Fisher's a better coach than Brett Bielema, don't get me wrong, but you could see another situation where it's like, okay, you can take over after Bobby Bowden, but what about going into a program that needs your rejuvenation, needs to be built on a new foundation? Can you do that? That's going to be the biggest question for Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher, and that's why I have my doubts about them.
Well, and you should have doubts considering what happened in Tallahassee a year ago. Why did it come unraveled last year? Why did they have to reschedule a non-conference? You know, they had a game early in the year that was supposed to be a non-con game, and then they had a hurricane come through, and remember they couldn't play the game. And then they needed to play that game, had to find a game to play late in the year just to become bowl eligible. Am I remembering all that correctly?
Yeah.
I believe I am.
Louisiana Monroe was the
right
team.
And so they had to find someone to play late in the year just to get bowl eligible, or like this, you know, centuries-old bowl streak was going to come to an end, because they'd been like in 30-some-odd straight bowl games, and that streak was going to come to an end. So they were scrapping and clawing to keep that going. So how did you get to that point? How did it come unraveled to where Florida State was scrapping and having to pull a rabbit out of a hat to make just 6 wins and bowl eligibility?
You can
under Jimbo Fisher, what happened there?
I mean, you could look at all the different things that he had, the off-the-field issues that were going on, because, you know, the Jameis Winston
ordeal.
This
is more than that.
Oh, I know, but I'm just saying it all added up. I think that there was a lot of different things that added up to end up with his demise. But, yeah, they were because I was just looking back at their schedule last year. They were number 3 in the country to start the year because they played Alabama there at the Chick-fil-A kickoff in Atlanta at the new stadium. So it was a huge game. They lost to Alabama 24-7, which, hey, even if you're number 3 in the country,
that
losing to Alabama 24-7 doesn't mean you're a terrible team. It happens.
Nick Saban getting another coach fired.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he does. Yeah. I mean, that's just what Nick Saban does. It's not just the SEC, but it's in other places too. So it just went downhill from there. And you know, obviously A&M with the program, with the finances and all that stuff, they're able to go out and they're able to overpay for a coach like Jimbo Fisher. But then going back to the other 3 programs that we've also been talking about with Arkansas, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss, you can even throw LSU in there, but we may save that for another time. Those 3 programs all had different situations with their coaching abilities. For one, Arkansas, they just fired Brett Bielema because he couldn't win. The plain and simple, he couldn't win. Nobody was showing up to games. At the absolute apathy that was going throughout the entire fan base was bad. You had to make a change there.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Miss, their whole situation, my goodness, with the scandals and the allegations and investigations and all that, they had to make the move and fire Hugh Freeze, brought in Matt Luke. He's an Ole Miss guy. And, you know, people can say whatever they want, but I fully believe that the reason that they hired Matt Luke full term and long term and full time is because that was really the only guy that they could go with, or at least a name guy, because nobody else was going to come into that situation.
The 10-foot pole job. No one of note was going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. They knew he was the floor. We can't do any worse than this guy because he wants the job. He's already here. He's established in our program. Our players were rallying around him. I remember all that was going on.
Yeah.
can't do any worse than this. They couldn't find anyone willing to take the job for the money they were willing to pay to do better than that. So they just kind of, you know, stayed status quo for where they're at now till this all clears out. And one of two things is going to happen. He's either going to win games, have success, and get a new contract and stay long term. Or when all of this NCAA cloud and all of these postseason bans and scholarship limitations and all that eases, they'll go find him a new coach.
And on the surface, it's not that bad. Yeah.
You're in a vortex, right? You can't get out of it. You know.
No.
You know. So they just got to stay. You know. They almost have to, forfeit. You know. Where they're at right now, because it's hard to go out and try to get on the same level with the rest of the league as far as trying to get a named coach when you've got all this hanging over your head.
And the other team in the division, Mississippi State, they hired a guy because Dan Mullen, they're one of their best coaches they probably had in their history, maybe the best coach. Decided to move on, go to Florida, go to a better job. Everyone was wondering at what point in time does Dan Mullen leave Mississippi State, and he finally did, and that's why they brought in Jim Moorhead.
You know, we had a lot of good debate and argument on the show last year about whether Dan Mullen was the second best coach in this league behind Nick Saban. We're going to find out.
Yeah.
You know, Nick Saban, he had some success at Mississippi State. Dan Mullen had some success at Mississippi State with Dak Prescott and with a couple of really good quarterbacks there. All right, now can you go and take what has been one of the premier programs in this conference? I know it's been down for a few years. They haven't found the right guy. They haven't been able to make it click with the right coach since Urban Meyer left. So they were very fortunate to go from Spurrier to Meyer, and then it's just kind of been a wandering through the wilderness for them. Even though they've gotten some names, still hadn't clicked. So how is this going to work out? And we'll find out. Is Dan Mullen one of the top-shelf coaches in this league? Because if you can't do it at Florida, I mean, you got everything. I know the facilities, and there's some debate about whether they have facilities, but you got recruits, and there are still plenty of players that want to wear that Florida jersey that are within, 3 hours of your school.
Yep, and he's got a tall task in front of him, and I'm not taking anything away from Mike Urban Meyer, but it also helped that they were coaching during a time where Miami was not where they were. And even Florida State, I know they had Jimbo Fisher doing a lot of things, but they weren't that national relevant team that was competing for a championship
The launching pad in Gainesville is much higher than the launching pad in Starkville, Oxford, College Station, Fayetteville, Baton Rouge. I mean, where he's starting, even though everything you said about these other programs and their success that's come on, and a lot of the lettered schools in the FIUs, the FAUs, all those schools that are getting players too in the state of Florida, the letter universities. Gainesville is still a place that, one or two in the state all the time. So we'll see. You know, he's still in a better position than everyone but Alabama, maybe Auburn. Georgia certainly is not in as good a place. But, top four program in this league right now, even with the problems they're having.
And the expectations high because, let's be honest, Jim McElwain, he won the East twice, and he was fired.
Yeah.
I know there was more than just that, but, even just getting to that point is not going to be enough for Florida Gator fans. You not only got to win the East or compete for the East, but you got to compete for national title, but that was the problem that he had too. But it's an interesting conversation. Of all these coaches, going back and putting it back to the point in perspective, all these coaches that are in the SEC West that have just been added in, we don't really know how they're going to take over their situations because they're all in different situations. But we do know that some of these coaches are either going to be successful or they're going to get fired because Nick Saban's going to make that happen.
This Morning Rush podcast brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up for game day with Bud Light. Gather your friends, grab some Bud Light, and get ready for the big game. Bud Light, drink responsibly. Now back to the podcast.
All right, let's go to the phone lines as we are joined by Barrett Salee of CBS Sports. It's been a long time. Barrett, how you doing this morning, man?
Good, guys. What's going on?
Well, we've been talking a lot about Arkansas spring game and the rest of the SEC, and we'll just, of course, start with Arkansas. I know Razorback fans seem to think that you're a hater of the program, and that's fine. I'm sure you get that a lot. But, the Razorbacks breaking in Chad Morris as the new head coach. Expectations aren't too high in Razorback land. What do you expect out of the Razorbacks? What did you see in the spring practices from just your overall assessment of their current situation?
Well, first of all, if they think I'm a hater of the program, they probably like affirmation rather than information because there's not been a lot to like about the program over the last couple of years. So, it's that That's fine. That's how fans are. But typically, the bias card is used by people who don't have any other option, and it's a crutch for the week. So that's just how it is. But in terms of Arkansas this year, you know, in the spring game, I thought they looked all right. I thought both quarterbacks, you know, they looked like they had a grasp of what Chad Morris wanted to do. They looked like they had progressed as passers. I thought Kelly and Story both had moments of brilliance. I love the way they used the tight end, Cheyenne O'Grady. You know, looks like the next in the cloning machine of tight ends that exists in Fayetteville, apparently. So, you know, overall, they looked good offensively. I think the one thing that they need to work on, and you sort of expect that to be lagging, is the pace in which Chad Morris wants to play. Because, you know, clearly they had issues getting the play in, getting the communication out, and running as fast as Chad wants. But 15 practices in, you sort of expect that. Still, the problem is defensive line, playmakers on the defense in general. I don't think they've got that. So they better refine that offense really, really well, because they're going to have to score a lot of points to win football games. I don't trust John Chavis. I don't trust him with an up-tempo offense. He's never been good when he's been in a situation where he's got to get plays in quickly and has to keep his players out on the field a lot of the time. And that's exactly how Chad Morris wants to play. And that's why I always thought Chavis was a terrible fit as the defensive coordinator at Arkansas. It doesn't make sense from a football standpoint or from a scheme standpoint. And I think Chad Morris, who I like as a coach, I think he was the right coach for Arkansas, made a strategical, you know, mistake when he went with a guy who knows SEC football rather than a guy as a defensive coordinator who can actually fit with what Arkansas wants to do.
So I'm going to stay with this Chavis thing, because no one's got more tenure, no one's got more experience on any staff in this league than John Chavis individually. I mean, he's the most tenured coach in the league, and you say he's experienced with SEC football, but not with this. Isn't what Arkansas is trying to do, and hasn't that become SEC football now? Up tempo,
right? John Chavis hasn't evolved with that. Like he didn't evolve with that at Texas A&M, and he had Miles freaking Garrett of all people. So, you know that. The SEC has evolved for absolutely,
okay.
And Arkansas has made the right decision from a scheme standpoint in what they want to do from a head coach perspective. But John Chavis has not evolved with SEC football at all.
Well, I think that's an interesting concept. I know you've talked about it before, and John Chavis, and you know, the hire of him. So, yeah. Was there a different direction, obviously, that you felt like they could have gone? Was there a name that popped up? Was there a type of style? I mean, what did you think Arkansas should have done or could have done in that situation on defense?
I would have thrown money at Trevarius Robinson, who's South Carolina's defensive coordinator, because he's a fantastic recruiter. He's got ties to Florida, which is something that I think Arkansas still needs to focus on. Obviously, they need to focus on Texas, too. And put more emphasis on Texas. He's behind Will Muschamp in terms of, you know, maybe visibility in that defense. They play good defense in South Carolina at times. They were, you know, obviously riddled by injuries last year. And he's a young, energetic guy who understands, you know, how to be a defensive coordinator in this league. And in reality, he's been a huge part of South Carolina's defense. But from a visibility standpoint and from an upward mobility standpoint throughout his career, he may not be on as fast of a track as he should be, because he's got a defensive-minded head coach that he's working for. So if you hire him and put him on in a situation where he is the guy, he gets to run the show, not only do I think that would have helped Arkansas, but I think you probably could have got him and sold him on that, because it would create a faster track for him to become a head coach eventually.
So do you think Chavis can't evolve, won't evolve? Why do you think Chavis can't get the job? Why do you think this old dog can't learn new tricks?
Because he hasn't yet. He's had plenty of opportunities to.
But the evolution of the league has only been, what, in the last 5 years, 3 or 4 years? I mean, Arkansas was the last holdover, LSU before that, Alabama. I mean, the Western Division really kind of changed in the last 3 years. It's not like it's been a 10-year project here.
Well, he wasn't very loved at LSU when that evolution took place, and he was in a division in which Texas A&M ran what Arkansas runs, essentially. Auburn had done that and done that at an elite level. Ole Miss and Mississippi State surely did. He didn't do it at LSU. He got the job at Texas A&M, certainly didn't do it at Texas A&M. So what's there to suggest he will? There's a proven track record to suggest that he won't.
Interesting take. And we're speaking with Barrett Silley of CBS Sports right now on the Morning Rush. Barrett, going to the offensive side, he's talked about Chad Horace. You like the hire. You think that Arkansas made the right choice in evolving on that side of the ball, getting to the offense. So I got to ask you, can Chad Morris, with what you've seen from him, what you've heard from him, can he be that guy like a Gus Malzahn or Hugh Freeze? I know that, you know, he's got some bad reputation there, but can he be that offensive-minded coach to where not only can he make some noise in the SEC, but maybe cause some fits for Nick Saban, as that's been the formula to kind of make him have some struggles? Can he be that next big coach in the SEC West?
Yeah, I mean, I think he could offensively, because he fits really exactly what, you know, what the SEC West does in terms of spread offenses. He spreads guys out, but you know, he'll tell you it's a power rushing attack out of the spread. That's what he did at Clemson. That's, you know, not necessarily what he did at SMU all the time, but they didn't really have the players to do that, nor did they really have the need to do that in that conference. So but his foundation is a power rushing attack out of the spread with tempo, and that's exactly what Gus Malzahn does at Auburn. And that obviously is proven to be successful. He's won two SEC West championships in the last five seasons. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's the right philosophy. It's the right way to go. They've got to find the players to do that at an extremely high level. I think they do have the running backs that can do that this year. I think the quarterbacks are on the right track. I don't know about the offensive line. You know, and I think the biggest issue or two issues that Arkansas faces is developing an offensive line this year that can do that effectively, and then making sure you have wide receivers that will get down and dirty and block. Because if you're going to do that effectively, you've got to have wide receivers who don't want the glory. You've got to have wide receivers who, you know, will get downfield and lay somebody out. And that's really hard to find. I'm not saying Arkansas doesn't have those guys, but you need to see it, and you need to see it consistently, because that's what makes those kind of offenses click.
All right, let's get you out of here on this one, because this is what everyone's talking about here, so I'd love your take. Who's going to be the quarterback? Cole Kelly, Ty Story, Connor Nolan, who hadn't even stepped foot on campus? That seems to be the conversation at Arkansas right now, or in the state of Arkansas, is who's going to take that first snap, and not from under center, but from behind the center, I guess, at Arkansas come September?
Well, I mean, from what Connor Nolan apparently is going to be a high Major League Baseball draft pick.
Well, he told him no thanks. He told earlier this week, he told Major League Baseball no thanks.
Well, that still doesn't necessarily mean no thanks, because if he gets drafted and gets a paycheck dangled in front of him, my suggestion always, and I said this about Kyler Murray, is go take that money, son. Because yeah. Major League Baseball is Major League Baseball, and it's a lot easier to make a living that way. You know, but in terms of, so I don't think it'll be Connor Nolan. I think it'll be Ty Story. I think he's a better passer. I think he kind of fits what, you know, what Chad wants to do from a short passing standpoint. And that's not to say Cole Kelly can't be that guy. He might be able to. I just think right now it seems like Ty Story's a little bit better fit. That, you know, and in spring, both of those guys have been sort of back and forth. So I think a lot of it depends on the next 4 months and what they do in terms of refining themselves in that offense, you know, when the coaches aren't necessarily around. But if I had to guess right now, it'd be Ty Story. But honestly, if I was going to Vegas to bet on that, I would not bet on that at all.
I mean, it's wide open, and Chad Morris has talked about how wide open it is. So a lot of people will be interested to see how that comes, or how that happens come fall. Barrett Silley of CBS Sports, always appreciate you joining us, Barrett. Great stuff. You can get after him on Twitter at Barrett Silley. Appreciate it, man. I'm sure we'll catch up with you later down the road.
All right, thanks, Jeff.
Anytime. Interesting about the John Chavis. We needed.
Well, I mean, he's had that take before.
Oh yeah,
and the track record is right. But that, you know, we'll see what the future is until it unfolds. You know, he had a lot of strong opinion about Bielema, and he was right about last year that the season wasn't going to go well, and he was right about that. No one gives him credit for it.
That's right.
You know, not many do give him credit for his opinion on last football season that he's accurate about. So,
and with the John Chavis take that he had, you know, we haven't seen anything in front of us to prove.
It's got to unfold.
Yeah, we got to see.
I don't know that he's right, but you know,
man. It's a hot take, and he may end up being right in the end of it. We'll see.
You've been listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up for game day with Bud Light. Gather your friends, grab some Bud Light, and get ready for the big game. Bud Light, please drink responsibly. And thanks for downloading the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.